Welcome to ScotsCast, the Bible teaching podcast of Scots Church Melbourne.
My very clever friend Lee is a bioscientist who's been working the last few years on mine site rehabilitation, and particularly the problem of desalinating the large bodies of water that mining seems to leave behind. To be honest, it's a problem I didn't even know existed until Lee and his friends solved it. And now their company Valerion delivers what they call solar biotech solutions for generating post-mining economic activity from saline-filled water voids. They do it with microalgae that converts sunlight and carbon dioxide into high protein biomass and oxygen. And solar pumps feed the clean water into greenhouses that are fertilised by the algae and produce huge crops of top grade tomatoes. Absolutely stunning transformation from salt lake to fresh fruit. Almost a miracle. How much harder, though, to desalinate the salt spring that James calls the human heart? The salt spring that feeds our tongues and potentially poisons, he says, the whole course of our lives. Because here's the thing. James says the problem is, doesn't matter who you are, the problem is, whenever we let out an unguarded word, it always seems to end badly, doesn't it? A little bit on the tipsy side of the staff Christmas party, you say what you really think. Or the early onset dementia, perhaps. Or the brain tumour or the stroke that just disinhibits your speech centre, and who knows what you'll say. Fact is, there is very little chance that it's going to be nice, that it's going to be peacemaking. The worry for all of us is that a momentary slip up of the tongue gives everyone a glimpse of what we're really like, of the salty spring within. And for desalinating that spring, there is no easy biotech solution. That's the ultimate problem with the tongue that James is unpacking here in chapter 3. The untamable wild beast that licks like a flame between our lips. The tongue we moan about when we say, me and my big mouth, I've done it again. The tongue we so often wish we'd bitten and held back. The ultimate problem with the tongue is that it so quickly reveals our hearts. So James says, think twice before you become a teacher in the church, because teachers use words, and words are a dangerous weapon. Because he says we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone doesn't stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man, she's a perfect woman. Abel to bridle their whole body. Now, I don't know what you'd have in mind as the perfect man. Leonardo drew him. Vitruvian man, ideal proportions of the human form, only improved, if you can see the image on the screen, by the addition of a rock guitar. In the movie called The Perfect Man, Hilary Duff is looking for the perfect partner for her single mum, someone who'll send flowers and love notes and always be thoughtful and reliable. Complicated movie, but they all live happily ever after. The perfect man. Great looking. Dwayne Johnson muscles. Smart and funny. Rich, of course. James says, it's the man who can perfectly control his tongue. Because if you can do that, he says, you can bridle your whole body. You'll be a person of absolute self-control. Which, of course, James says, is a very big ask. Because, as you'll see, of that even bigger problem, the salt spring that by nature lies inside all of us. And so he goes on to expand, and this is something that James does so beautifully. The way he writes is full of colour, to expand on the way the tiny tongue has such disproportionate impact. Like a bit, he says, in the mouth of a horse. Small bit, big horse. Turn left for Ballarat, right for Bairnsdale. The slightest twitch on the bit. Or ships, he says, with a tiny rudder. Take a look at his words in verse 4. He says, look at the ships also. Though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they're guided by a very small rudder, wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. The disproportionate impact of a tiny tongue making a big boast that can lead to a world of disagreement and division and disappointment. You know, we used to say as kids, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Brave talk, wasn't it? But wrong. Words can do more damage than sticks and rocks any day. Now, I'm not planning to read Prince Harry's autobiography, but I guess we're hearing most of it secondhand in the media anyway. But let me just say, if Charles really did laugh at Harry as a little boy and say, who knows if I'm even your real father? If he really said that, no wonder Harry's a broken man. And if the whole thing eventually brings down the monarchy, maybe it will all come down to those words so long ago. Words. James again, verse 5 and 6. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, set on fire by hell. An ink stain, spreading everywhere, ruining everything. A fire that starts as a cigarette butt out the car window and ends up burning the whole east coast of Australia from top to bottom. The tongue, says James here, is like a cosmos in its own right, a world of wickedness, ruining lives, as if it has a life of its own, sparked by the fires of hell. Boy, he's pretty dark, isn't he? A little bit, a little rudder, always steering into trouble. A fire, a world of pain, a stain. There's more. James stacks image on top of image. It's worse, he says, than a wild animal. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature, can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil, full of deadly poison. We are so smart, so superior, that we can tame almost everything. Every kind of animal, except, of course, cats, I reckon. Because cats, as you know, tame us. Dog is man's best friend. Cat is man's casual acquaintance. But okay, apart from cats, James says, we've tamed lions and eagles, snakes and dolphins, but we can't tame the tongue. It's untamable, it's tireless, it's evil. It's full of deadly poison. No human being can tame it, he says, which is where in verses 9 and 10, James starts to get practical and move from imagery and metaphor to some real life situations, which reflect what we'd call, I guess, real life hypocrisy. That in the concrete real life situation James is writing to, there are people who, in the one breath, are giving lip service blessings to God, and in the next breath, with the same mouth, calling down unbridled curses on other people, people who are made in God's image. From the same mouth, says James, what's going on? With it, we bless our Lord and Father, and with it, we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, these things ought not to be so. Now, friends, can I ask you this morning, is that ever true of you? Look, to be honest, James says it is true of all of us. And it is the symptom of that deeper issue I mentioned at the start. It's the fact that none of us can completely control our tongues because they are fed from a salt spring. From, as our Bible tends to call it, the heart, the seat of our inner desires. Listen to how Jesus puts it in Mark's Gospel. He's being questioned about ceremonial washing, which the Jews had to do before every meal in case you ate with unclean hands. It's all about the externals. It's Mark 7 from verse 15. Jesus says, nothing outside a person can defile them by going into them. Rather, it's what comes out of a person that defiles them. He says, for it is from within, out of a person's heart, that evil thoughts come. Sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and defile a person. Which is why you see our unguarded tongues are so dangerously revealing. Now, is James too negative? It's interesting, if you're a little bit of a techie person, you might remember way back in 2016, Microsoft released a really clever chatbot that used artificial intelligence to engage in conversations with people on Twitter, learning as millions of people interacted with it, learning the kind of things people say and think, and reflecting that back as automatically generated messages. Do you know, within 24 hours, Microsoft had to ditch the experiment, shut it down completely, because it was parroting back racist and sexist hate speech. And so right at the moment, ChatGPT, you might have heard about it, everyone's talking about it on the news. The new automated text generator that can patch together information on the internet and automatically write your uni essays. Platforms like ChatGPT have to spend a fortune on systems that filter out racism, that filter out the hate speech, to protect us from what? The reflection of ourselves. So what are we really like? Artificial intelligence like that averages out everything on the internet and comes out sprouting hate speech. Because the tongue or the keyboard fingers are a restless evil full of deadly poison, blessing and cursing in the same breath, growing olives and figs on the same vine. Who'd have thought? So here's the bottom line. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water? See, the answer is no. A spring doesn't do that. No, a fig tree doesn't do that, nor a grapevine. And no, a salt pond does not yield fresh water. In short, we are really weird. And it shouldn't be. So how can we desalinate the pond? Short of calling my mate Lee and his biotech engineers, short of implementing AI filters on everything we say or write. In fact, no amount of tech is going to help. Because when the bitterness comes right from the heart, from the centre of who we are, from the essence of the human condition, the problem is profound. What are we meant to do about it? So here are the symptoms. Here's the source, verse 14. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, don't boast and be false to the truth. The bitterness, the jealousy, it starts, as you can see, in our hearts, where we constantly compare ourselves with the people around us and we're not satisfied. We're selfish, we're ambitious, we're resentful. Our hearts tell us we're not being treated with the respect we deserve as the most important person in the room. And the next thing you know, it pours out our mouths. Then trouble. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. Friends, that is sadly so often how it is, from William and Harry in the royal family, all the way back to Cain and Abel in the first family, all the way to your family on a weekend or over the fence with your neighbour or in your workplace on a Monday morning. Unless God does something supernatural in our hearts. Which is the prospect that James wants to draw our attention to. The prospect that starts, as we saw back in chapter 1, with what James calls the implanted word that's able to save your souls. It starts, you might remember if you've been here the past few weeks, with that call to put your faith actively in the Lord Jesus, who James calls the Lord of mercy, whose royal law is the law of love. Not just lip service, but life service. Real allegiance. Okay, it's stretching things a little bit, but James is talking about, you see, the implanted word which is able to desalinate our hearts. Which was something that the nation of Israel had been looking forward to for generations as they struggled and failed to master their hearts. The Old Testament prophet Ezekiel had made a long-standing promise that the day would come when God would act to clean up human hearts. Here's how Ezekiel puts it. God says, I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you shall be clean from all your uncleannesses and from all your idols. He says, I will cleanse you, and I will give you new hearts, and a new spirit I will put within you. And I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh, and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes. Friends, this is the profound benefit, the promise at the centre of our Christian faith, that makes all the difference. That it's not about keeping a bunch of rules and commands that struggle to constrain our bitter hearts. But it's about as loyal subjects of King Jesus being gradually transformed by a whole new spirit, a whole new attitude, a whole new wisdom that James calls the wisdom from above. Which instead of breeding bitter jealousy and selfish ambition, produces the exact opposite. Verse 14. Bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts. That's not wisdom from above. That's unspiritual, says James. Verse 17, he says, but have the wisdom from above instead. Heart desalination. Pure, he says. Peaceable. Gentle. Open to reason. The total opposite to our natural inclination. Full of mercy and good fruits. Impartial. Remember chapter 1? Impartiality. Not favouring certain people on the basis of their bank balance or their gold ring. Takes heart change for that, the wisdom from above. And he says a sincerity. So you're solid all the way through. James says a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace like that. Blessed are the peacemakers, says Jesus. Saltwater hearts sowing arguments and division, or hearts being changed by the Spirit, transformed by the wisdom from above, bringing peace. Which is it with you? Which is it that you want it to be? Which is it that is going to typify our attitudes to one another as a church? Louise always says to me, if I eat too much chocolate, what starts on your lips ends on your hips. Now this goes the other way. See, salt springs from salty hearts. When we like that, it starts in our hearts and ends up on our lips, whether we like it or not, no matter how we try to hold it in. Out pops the most revealing word at the worst possible time. The problem is, because of the way we're made, it's just about impossible to bridle our tongues if your heart has not been bridled first. Desalinated, being made fresh through the seed of that implanted word, growing by the work of God's Spirit in our hearts.
You've been listening to Scotscast, the Bible teaching podcast of Scots Church Melbourne.